Welcome to Parallel Lives, Episode 2, dearest listeners. This is, of course, the show all about the smart, the strange, and the super cool in the world of cooperative storytelling. Today, we answer a simple question. What if the world really did revolve around you?
Hi, Bram am here, and I am joined again by Raven.
Hello!
It is just a two-person podcast this time, so buckle your seatbelts. It's time for adventure. We are going to be addressing another game by Ben Robbins, the creator of Microscope, which we explored in Episode 0. It is his most recent creation, Kingdom. Kingdom, like Microscope, is a world-building game of sorts, but it's much, much weirder, I say. I think that's fair to put it.
You know, you've said that a couple times, and I don't know that it's weirder, but I think that the systems are a little less intuitive, so I guess that maybe mechanically it's weirder. Conceptually, it's kind of straightforward in that each person, like in a conventional role-playing game, gets a single character, and then you're also playing a community in that each of your character occupies a position that either has power over the community or has insight into the direction the community is going, or is representative of the community as a whole.
The way that Kingdom works is that each person in the game plays a distinct character, and the character could be basically anyone, but they each, more than just being a person, also sort of represent a distinct and undeniable truth about your community. In the case of Kingdom, that means that one type of character can be the power, one type of character is the touchstone, one type of character is the perspective. And what that means is you have characters that make all the concrete decisions and give distinct orders. You have characters that represent how the kingdom is feeling about certain things or just in general. And you have characters that you can just make predictions and those predictions are true. This is a game where you are zoomed in more than a microscope. You're not telling the whole details of the beginning of the Earth to the founding of a super empire or anything like that. You're choosing one specific community, called your kingdom in this case, and it could be anything. There's a lot of examples in the book, some sillier than others. One of the kingdoms that it offered was a Santa's workshop after Santa got missing and things go bad. We decided not to play that one, but who knows? Parallel Lives Holiday Edition?
Oh my god.
To go back to what I was saying, though, so Raven doesn't find it that strange, but when I say that it's weird, I mean to say more than most games, at least that I've experienced, Kingdom is one where you are simultaneously playing both a character and a GM. You are playing your character. In like my case, the character that I was playing was a sort of crotchety old wizard named Marcus the Word, because that's his wizard name. And he represented power in the community. And thing is, this had an effect in terms of the actual play, in that Marcus the Word could make decisions and throw people in jail, which he sure did, and other kinds of stuff. But it also meant
in Microscope, they have the concept of focuses. Mm-hmm. In Kingdom, instead, we have crossroads, where each round of play, very similar to Microscope, one person picks a, in this case, situation that the community has to come to a resolution about. So it's phrased as a question, and at the end of the round, only the players who currently occupy a power position get a vote on whether the community answers yes or no to the question.
A lot of these would be things that clearly makes sense on the power character, you know, the character in character deciding. Like, we had three crossroads during our game. I don't know if that's above average or below average. It feels below average, maybe, but they took a long time.
One of the other major differences with Microscope was that since we were all playing specific characters, every scene was role-played, so we never just said, this happened in Kingdom. In order for something to happen, the players have to act out that thing occurring. The book did seem to think that a session was going to include all of us having two crossroads, and we only got through one.
Yeah, only one apiece. And part of this was because we spent a long time choosing our setting. I'll get to that. We had three crossroads in our game. That's one per player, because it was me, Raven, and Shannon. The first crossroad was, will the kingdom greet the outsiders with open arms? Because we had various people having an encampment on the edge of our community. The second crossroad was, will we import an answer to the rampaged shroom wolves? And if you're wondering about shroom wolves, don't worry, we'll get there. Hold on to your pants. And the third crossroad was, will the kingdom democratize the wizard's powers? So, for the first two, it's pretty obvious the wizard can just say, well, no, we're not going to deal with these outsiders, or yes, we're going to import an answer to these darn shroom wolves. But for the third one, I think it's a little bit less obvious. In the end, it would have been my decision, yes or no, I were just straight up not going to democratize my power because I'm a wizard. I think it's an interesting system because you're often put at odds between what is interesting and what your characters want to do, and that's a thing in other systems somewhat, but usually it is all a thing that one GM will take care of. The power is even maybe the worst example because, you know, you can see, well, you know, the person with power makes all decisions, mostly. But, for instance, the Touchstone character, you'll play your character just like normal, but then when you want to invoke your Touchstone powers, suddenly your character means a whole lot more than your normal character. Or maybe sometimes you're playing the perspective character, and the perspective character's power is that, again, things that they say will come true, and they're not necessarily things they want to come true.
That's not too difficult to roleplay. Like, I spent most of the session as our perspective character because I thought that the mechanics built around perspective were most interesting. And I kind of played it as my character was really simultaneously cynical and really worried about things. So a lot of my predictions came in the form of, gee, I'm worried this will happen. But because I say it as a perspective character, that means that if I say, if the kingdom decides to solve this problem like this, this will happen. Because my character's worried about that, that will happen.
Let's go back to the beginning for now, though.
Okay.
So, one thing that I like a lot, although we didn't end up using it, the PDF, the book for Kingdom, is something like 140 pages long, I believe. Of that, I want to say it only has like 70, 80 pages of rules.
Like half of them.
Like half of them, yeah. Yeah. So it's cool because Ben Robin, creator of Microscope, creator of Kingdom, included a lot of story seeds in there to get your mind flowing, and we thought briefly about using a modified version of one called Hammer the Gods, which was basically about playing gods, which seems pretty cool. But we spent a long time thinking, despite the lovely seeds, about what we wanted our setting to be, because we were torn between fantasy and sci-fi, we were torn a little bit totally between serious and slightly sillier. We almost ended up playing something that I think would have ended up being much more 2000 AD game, which is not what people actually wanted, and that's okay.
Although we spent a lot of our session discussing the setting, I feel like that really ended up being very beneficial. We all started with a emotional stake in the setting, and I feel like all three of us were really excited about exploring the world we came up with. I think that the start of Kingdom may have been a little slow had we not started with that level of excitement.
Oh, I agree, and like, to toot my own horn here, the setting that we ended up doing was sort of one that I'd vaguely come up with, like, at high school science fiction writing class. But what it is it's a generation ship, the inside of which is a multi-level, we don't know how many stories there were, biosphere-perfect world, with each different floor was a different environment of some kind or another. We had never left our home floor, but we didn't interact with them. And they're all connected via various series of elevators. And the other little detail that allows for wizardry, because you may notice this is a science fiction setting, is that though the people living here mostly are not aware of the true nature of the world, or even what that would mean, they can interact with the systems on the ship via control pads, think kind of just like a tablet, if they know enough of the old words to be able to use the tablet, and then you can control the weather, you can turn off the lights, or I think there was a golem that showed up eventually you could control with the tablet. That is the form of magic, and the thing that I said that convinced my compatriots to let me have a wizard tower for my wizard was that the higher up he was, the better Wi-Fi signal he had for his tablet.
Which I thought was really cute.
So the way it worked was that we were all on our level of Mycopia, we call it, because it was a fungal community, where instead of having normal trees, it was mostly just fungus all over the place, which, official going on the record, Parallel Lives editorial here, mushrooms are gross. But it worked out for us. It gave a kind of unique feel.
That was my largest contribution to the setting, actually. Once we finally settled on the generation ship with the levels and the ship processes as magic, we started talking about what our level was going to look like, and Shannon wanted to play in a forest community, and I thought that was a good idea in that there are a number of, like, jobs and character archetypes that come really easily with that, but felt like it was going to be a little normal, which was kind of a loss for how crazy the other ideas in our setting were. So the forest setting as a mushroom level ended up allowing us to use a lot of the same ideas we probably would have ended up using anyway, but it all had a different visual texture. As Brian's already mentioned, we did an arc about the shroom wolves, and normally, like, the wolves are attacking the community is like a really boilerplate Middle Ages plotline, but people know what wolves are like, and we got to have a little fun with how shroom wolves themselves were alike and different from wolves, and we decided that they were a symbiote that had kind of evolved into one animal.
The shroom wolves glow in the dark. They're way cool.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the other levels, we didn't really discuss them too much. I'll get to the one that we really know about in just a minute, but...
And we did briefly go to that one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It is the case that the different levels had certainly different levels of technology, different sorts of society. Probably, you know, they're not all mushroom levels. You know, we jokingly decided one of the levels was probably just full of diamonds, but that we never went to the diamond level or had anything to do with the diamond
level. No, we never had anything to do with the diamond level.
It's too bad, because it'd be all kinds of sweet.
That was the second time in a world-building system that we had a running joke concept that never integrated into the setting. I remember in Microscope, we joked a lot about wolf people, but by the end of the session, like, wolf people had never showed up, and they were always things like someone who currently wasn't playing, which was like, then the wolf people show up, and y'all, no, shut up, they're not the wolf people.
Our Microscope game had kind of an embarrassment of different races, so I think that's, again, like, wolf people just aren't that much more interesting than anything else we had.
I think the reason wolf people came up was more or less the same reason that the diamond level kept coming up. It was just such a bad idea that, because you are world building on the fly, so sometimes there's a pause between, like, and the people they interact are from, and, like, while you're pausing, someone inevitably is like, oh, the diamond level, they must be from the diamond level. No, not the diamond level.
Yes, well, to be clear, the diamond level is so far non-canon, but we'll see. Dear listeners, you never know. When you set up Kingdom, you make your character, you make your setting, and you also set up a couple of threats. In our cases, the threats were children disappearing, which we never really got to.
No, we never
did that. They happened to be disappearing, but who knows why. Shroom wolves are going restless, which we certainly did get to. Shroom wolves were dangerous. And the outside cabin near an elevator, and that was a big old deal. The outside encampment, to be clear, was the one level I was talking about that we did develop a little bit, and they were basically Romans. We ended up giving them a name that Shannon had to come up with on the spot, and then she didn't like, but we had to stick with it, which was Impshires, and she wanted to change it, it's not her fault. They were basically Romans, we called them Romans most of the time anyways. And then we also had to set up a couple of locations, just so we kind of knew the feel of our place, and so we had locations, which was The Pit, which is a teen hangout. Old Winston's Farmstead, which we never explored, but we knew it was there, and that gave a little bit of flavor crunch, at least. There was Elevator C, which was kind of where Microcopy was centered around, and that was where there was a bazaar. And I actually liked Elevator C a lot, because that was where other people could enter from the levels and hawk their wares, which might have been genetically altered creatures in the gene tech level, or, you know, various other things. There was a gun introduced briefly into it. Someone had a gun, even though guns were beyond the tech level of our place, but, you know, if we trained enough, it's possible. And Shannon's character was actually kind of a world traveler, so she might have had some connection with stuff that most characters wouldn't.
She had a guy.
Did she have a guy?
Yeah, she shot the Shroom Wolf Queen.
Yeah, fair enough. Shannon's character was kind of a badass.
Yeah.
We had these various locations, we had these threats, we each had a character. So it was the case that my character, being the wizard, hung out at the Wizard Outpost. Janie D, which was Shannon's character, hung out at the pit because she was just a drunk who hung out with the teenagers and told her stories of travels.
She was kind of a seasonal worker, so, like, we decided that we had, like, seasons where we sent out caravans to go hawk our wares on other levels, and then the caravans came back, and Janie's character didn't really have anything to do in between those times, so she just kind of drank away the money she made during that period.
Yeah. And then we had Reagan's character, who was Novus, and he hung out at, good name, by the way, Dark Pod Outpost.
Novus was a very standard character for me to play in that he had a lot of bluster, but was also kind of just the first person to turn tail and run when something went wrong. He was right there on the front line to be like, yeah, we should start a war with these people. They need to go. And then once the war started, he was like, whoa, I have nothing to do with this. Like, this is scary and I'm going to go hide over there. And he was initially a perspective character, but as the tone of the society shifted, I thought it was really cool that by shuffling around our roles a little, Novus made a really natural transition into Touchstone as the other members of society became more xenophobic and just in general more extreme about how we moved from an era where Janie's character was really standard, so at least in my head, most of the members of the community were kind of laid back and curious about the outside world, but maybe too lazy or just didn't have the tendency to follow through with learning new things, to my character being the baseline for the society, and suddenly we were having riots and huge demonstrations where my character gave impassioned speeches about how unfair it was that the wizard had so much power in our society and that we had outsiders at all. Like, I was advocating closing all the borders. And then when things started to fall apart, Novus just kind of, he had no, I never made the push to overthrow for power. So both mechanically and in the story, he never really stepped into a position that he was making decisions or taking any responsibility for his actions.
One other thing on the character sheets that I liked was that you each have to have a bond with the person to your left. And in a larger game, this would be perhaps even a little more varied, but because there were three of us, we were each bonded to the other one. And we ended up being bonded fairly closely. I think it would be possible to have slightly more distant bonds, and that'd be just fine. But like, it was a case that Novus's bond with Shannon's character
was that he just kind of thought that she was a dangerous layabout. I was still playing under the assumption that Janie was really typical for our society, so I was kind of trying to start us with the impression that the guards had kind of a predatory position in the society, where even though the citizens just kind of wanted to hang out and do their thing, like, the guards were around being like, no, don't do that, that's dangerous, don't go into the forest, don't go to the other levels, like, and the whole session up to the end, when Janie's character changed very radically.
Yeah. So, Novus basically just thought Janie was a layabout and spent a long time at the pit trying to get people to straighten up and stop being rowdy teenagers. Janie's connection with Marcus the Word was a surprise one, actually, where it turns out that she was just his daughter, which was not a thing that I realized at all until we did that, but it worked out just fine.
I thought it was actually a really brilliant idea. Like, it really brought together the cast, where it said a lot about both characters.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
Janie was Marcus's disappointing daughter who, like, should have been his apprentice, but instead was just, like, frolicking around on other levels and drinking her life away. But he was also the sort of guy who would look at his daughter and be like, you know, you're not so great. I'm not going to have you be my apprentice. I'm going to pick somebody else.
And the somebody else, as it happened, was Marcus's connection with Novus, was that he was tutoring his older sister, Phylan. And this ends up working out okay, because unfortunately, by playing a character who lives at the top of a tower, it made it weird to be appearing in a lot of scenes with other characters, because, man, Wizard spent a lot of time up in the tower. He's an old man. It takes a long time to get down to the tower. Maybe I should have had an elevator installed in that. I don't know.
I felt like in the rulebook there are like advanced optional rules for playing a power character who is, I think the book refers to it as a deferred power character. Yeah. And for most of the session, you were actually playing Bynum as a deferred power character. And it was kind of a missed opportunity that she didn't get her own character sheet and her own set of goals and fears and such. Because she was an interesting character and she got a lot more screen time than Marcus, but it did end up being that pretty close to 100% of your memorable screen time was with Marcus.
I enjoyed being able to use Phylon as kind of a go-between. It was interesting because the way that we used her was I played her most of the time, but occasionally other players would play her when it came up in a scene and you needed to. It worked out okay because she had a basic but fine personality where she really looked down on Janie because she ended up being the apprentice after all, and she was very prim and proper, and Janie was a wild drunk and that kind of thing.
Phylon and Novus. I ended up playing Phylon a lot.
Okay.
Whenever she wasn't you, she was me, and I envisioned her being too similar to Novus for them to like each other, so, like, they were both kind of arrogant and really proper, so whenever they interacted, it was very cold and distant. But overall, we ended up almost playing four characters, and it worked better than I would assume that would have worked out.
It worked surprisingly okay, all things considered. A nice thing that I think it had to do with is choose those threats at the early on, because that gave us an idea on what to do on our first and second crossroads. And the crossroads, to be clear, are things that you determine ahead of time, and then you sort of work towards them over the course of several different scenes. Like, each player gets to decide what their scene is. You do the scene, the crossroad increments to being filled out, and then eventually you go and you actually start having the crossroad. And this gives it time to really see what the impact of this will be. And one of the concrete ways it'll happen is the prospective character can assign predictions to the crossroad, and each crossroad takes the form of a question. The first crossroad, I already said, is will the kingdom greet outsiders with open arms? The answer is yes, or no, they will repel them. In yes, there ended up being the prediction they will bring war. And in the no, there ended up being they will covet our goods. And, you know, those are things that came up over the course of scenes as we talked about it, as we thought about it, and that kind of stuff. And also, as a power character, I got to assign orders to yes and no. I didn't do as much as I probably should have.
I think that as a perspective character, I didn't make as many predictions as I should have either. I think that the decision-making process at the end of the crossroads would have been more interesting if there had been more in the ballpark of four or five predictions on both sides. You really had to weigh, like, I want the kingdom to be successful, but also this is going to screw over the royal family. Versus this will be detrimental to the royal family, but also good to our foreign relations and also our crops.
And it's interesting, I hadn't thought about that idea. This is a lot of predictions, but you might be right.
I think that we weren't making enough predictions, and it made it so that generally by the end of a crossroads, it was pretty clear what was going to be chosen because one of them was worse than the other.
Yes and no. And again, this ties back to my earlier thing where I was talking about how sometimes you choose things that are not good for the kingdom because they're more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first one was, will the kingdom greet outsiders with open arms? And in this case, the outsiders were the impchers, the Romans, who had created a little encampment outside one of the further elevators from town. And they weren't doing anything in particular, but they were sort of threatening. And we tried to see if they would trade with us, and they kind of just took our stuff.
They were kind of brutish and didn't speak our language and had armor and weapons. So.
Yeah, well, they had diamond tipped spears from the diamond level, didn't they? Ah, the diamond level in the game after all.
They did. They had diamond spears.
I'm glad. Anyways, sorry.
They were canon after all.
The one thing I want to say on this is I think the NPCs for the game can sometimes be a little weird. Like, Phylon worked out just fine because we knew who she was very well. The Romans were a little bit stranger because, like, you gave them a general shape and a general idea, but they could have been anything. We didn't really know until we started that scene. Mm-hmm. And it is the case that later I played a character from the Romans as well. And I had to pause for a long moment while I was trying to play that character because I realized I wasn't 100% sure of what their goals were or what they were doing or how this character would react. And I sort of just ended up having them, again, be slightly antisocial and interested in our stuff. But
I think that that ended up being a problem. The three of us seemed to have very different perspectives on what was going on off screen with the Romans, where Shannon really wanted them to be kind of a weak bully nation that came in and pretended to be great, but like went home and were all starving. But I thought it would be interesting if there was a level that was gradually taking over other levels and kind of establishing a empire on the ship. And those are two very different ideas. And it definitely was a source of tension that wouldn't have existed had we established the specifics of their society early on. And I think that that might actually be something to think about in any Kingdom game, because even though we had kind of an unusual setting, even if you were playing in the standard, our kingdom is the court of King Arthur. Like, you're going to interact with other kingdoms, other communities, and if I think that the Nords that Branham introduced are just a little tiny community, but Branham intended them to be a whole empire, we might end up saying really contradictory things that sometimes, like, if I catch on early enough and I'm willing to defer with Bram's ideas, that doesn't create any plot holes. But very late in the game, Shannon felt that Mycopia, our kingdom, could repel a invasion from the Romans, and I didn't. She had perspective, and so her prediction was right, because that's how the game works. I didn't actually have a problem with that happening, nor was I interested in switching roles. I'm like, I understand how that's how the game works. But because she didn't see the contradiction, she also didn't see any reason to rationalize why it would be different. And it was really immersion-breaking for me that just all of a sudden Romans kind of sucked at fighting, even though they had better training and weapons and more troops. Like,
well, the thing about it is, partially in this case too, is the way that they were introduced and we interacted with them early on, they were the Schrodinger's Romans, as I'm pretty sure historians have called them, in that they either could have been a small bully nation or they could have been an expanding empire. And the way they were acting, it was easily either one of those, and we didn't really know until things came to a head. And that's the point where stuff happened. And, like, it worked out all right, I think, in the end. And I was interested where our story was going. But it was a strange moment. So, you know, to be clear, on our first crossroads, we repelled the Romans, the wizard used his power, and he just had it rain on that elevator area for, like, weeks at a time. So the Romans were like, no, this sucks. And they decided to go home. And then we moved on to our second thing, where things started to concentrate on the rampant Shroom Wolves invasion. And this was the point where, again, you know, like, J.D. Shot the Shroom Wolf Queen, and we had various discussions on, will we import these animals or whatever? We don't know.
I ended up playing a scene that I didn't intend when I created the scene, but which only included my character. And I was really unprepared for how awkward it was to simultaneously roleplay my character in that scene and also essentially GM the entire rest of everything else going on around my character. And I think that potentially, while playing Kingdom, it would be best to adopt the declared scenes when no one else is interested in being in your scene. Because for me, it was really strange to try to write a scene around just myself.
I think this is the point where one of the things I notice about Kingdom comes up, wherein, for a question this stark, there was a couple times where it came up for myself to decide on a scene, and the scene, I had to really think on it, because it felt like for the wizard, the scene would have been like, well, do I or don't I? And you can't have that just be a scene, because that's the entire crossroads. So there's a lot of scenes about, like, well, I'll send Phylan to go talk to the traders, and she'll see if the Crocagator is what we all want to import. Or, it had a sillier name, it wasn't
even. Oh man, it was
the Croco Beast.
The Croco Beast. I very briefly played a used car salesman of the Gene Tech level who was trying to shill kind of like embarrassments of genetic failure as monsters. And I had like a spliced crocodile gopher that he was trying to sell as a solution to our shroom wolf problem. I intended it to be a lighthearted scene, and it did seem to be funny. Also, had Bram, who was in power, been like, yes, we're going with the Coco Gator. That's hilarious. Like, I don't know how that would have...
The weird thing, to be clear, is, for the way this works, if we had imported an answer to the rampant shroom wolves, the prediction was already that they would deal with the shroom wolves, I believe.
Yeah.
And they would disrupt the ecosystem, because that's what happens to import animals. But they would have dealt with the shroom wolves, and that's a little weird.
I think that maybe what's... We didn't know this being our first time playing Kingdom, but I don't think it was a very good phrasing of the crossroad. It was a little too open-ended. The question has to be yes or no. And it was a yes or no question, but importing a solution ended up being a lot of different things we could import. And it was the highlight of the session, the solution that we chose, but it also left this period being kind of weird and unfocused, where we had a lot of scenes that didn't seem to really go anywhere.
Yeah, so that can happen. It did happen in this case, and because I wanted to make things more interesting, and I decided the wizard was going to make a terrible decision, which was that the wizard wanted to get a discount solution to the wolves, and the discount solution to the wolves in this case was, well, we know of a place that already wants our goods, and we talked to some merchants who said that they're low on goods, so they'd probably give us a good price. Let's go talk to the Romans.
Which ended up being one of my favorite plot twists in my entire career of role-playing. Like, it was so out of left field, but at the same time, just geniusly appropriate for the themes and ideas that had been discussed in the game. Like, it was really a stellar moment. Like, I can remember Shannon and I both just being awestruck that you thought to bring the Romans back in. Like, I had thought of them as just kind of throwaway arc villains. But it was a brilliant but also completely terrible solution to our problems. And I was admittedly kind of losing interest. This was a really slow and boring crossroad. But that really ratcheted up the whole session.
I'm glad it ended up being pretty popular because I wanted to go as silly as I could go. I mean, not silly, but I realized that the way to make things move sometimes was to have your characters be really dumb. And I tried to roll with that as hard as possible in this case. It was one of those things where I was just feeling to myself, like, oh, I know what I'm going to do for my next scene. This is going to be great.
I had a moment like that, too.
Yeah.
Where it was coming around the table and I was going to have the next crossroad. And I was like, I'm going to set it up so that the people decide that maybe they want to democratize the wizard's power. And during the conclusion of this crossroad, Shannon decided she wanted to take my role. So she's like, oh, I'm going to overthrow you, Raven. And I just like burst out laughing because it ends up being so natural that her character shifts from being the perspective of the community to like warning the community that their actions are stupid and are going to have negative consequences. Whereas my character moves from being a prediction character to being in a time period where the community agrees with him and his ideas were terrible. Where he's like, yes, there's absolutely no reason other than tradition that we let one person decide when we are and aren't going to use the magic. We're going to use the magic all the time. It's going to be great. And that whole crossroad, we were rioting and double-crossing, and it was great.
This previous crossroad, the rampant shroom wolves one, ended in an overthrow. And how that works is, when you want to challenge something, you have two choices. You have either the basic level challenge, where you propose a different way for things to go than the one being described by a person, and they can either say yes or no, and if they say no, that's it. Or, if that doesn't work, or you just want to change things up even more, you can do the overthrow. And the overthrow is when you decide that things are going to happen such that your character is going to change from their current role to the role of another character, and you'll take that role from them.
And this has to happen both in and out of the game. So if you're overthrowing power, your character has to do something that grants them power, but then you as the player are also suddenly responsible for all of the power rules.
Yeah. So it was the case that, I can't remember exactly what happened to make Janie D become Touchstone from Perspective. She was just getting more involved in politics, is mostly what it was.
Shannon decided she really didn't like one of my predictions, because as a Perspective character, I was trying to spice up the game by giving really negative predictions. And she really didn't like one of mine. I think I decided that the Romans were going to come and solve our Shroomwolf problem by just completely annihilating our Shroomwolf population, and in the process, like, most of our rainforest and everything. So Janie kind of has a revelation and starts working with the community to make sure that the Romans are overseen properly, but in doing so, she had to give something up, and what she gave up was, like, the approval of the teens that her character used to hang out with.
The process of overthrowing always involved your character losing something important to them, and that's a permanent loss. That was Janie's in this case. The kids all decided that she had sold out.
And she tried to come back to them later, but it wouldn't. She had to give them up, and the thing she gave up was permanent, so they wouldn't take her back, which was kind of a fun character moment.
Tragic. And when you overthrow, you can do a couple of things, including cancel out previous predictions by the Perspective, if you're taking over from the Perspective. So she canceled out new animals will disrupt ecosystem, the new animals being the Romans in this case.
Which I laughed about.
Yeah, which would have ended clear, this prediction would have ended us with, like, a burnt down forest and probably a Roman occupied country. And instead she gave the new prediction, Romans will help kill wolves, things seem sweet, yo. That's a direct quote there. So that is what happened. But in the case, Raven got to do his own Touchstone thing, which worked out pretty well, as it happens. And we moved on to our third and final crossroads of Will We Democratize Wizard Power.
And it kind of added a dramatic irony where Novus, the whole game, was really concerned that the Romans were going to have a negative influence on Mycopia. But Shannon, by taking over the prediction, made it so that the Romans were kind of a neutral force, but by becoming a Touchstone, the whole community suddenly agreed with Novus, and even though the Romans weren't actively causing problems, we all treated them like they were.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, it worked out pretty well, and I was a fan in the end. So, Will the Kingdom Democratize the Wizard Power? I feel like, in parts of it, it started spiraling a little out of control, even our control as players. But what it was is it more or less involved a lot of scenes of revolutionaries gathering together, of rabble-rousing in the streets. There was one point where the Wizard Tower got broken into and people were jerks.
I broke into the Wizard Tower. We stole just, like, whatever we could find that we thought would help us read the stuff on the tablet. And then I brought it back to the people and was like, oh, look, we could be wizards, too. They'll all be fine. We can kill the wizard. There's absolutely no important function that he serves.
When Raven was breaking into the tower, he was definitely expecting to be caught. And I decided not to catch him because I thought it might be more interesting for them to have really bad ideas about wizards and how wizardry works. And that didn't end up coming up too much, but it was still interesting.
It ended up not coming up because we kind of naturally fell into a story arc that Shannon had accidentally established right at the beginning of the game, when she decided that her character was Marcus's daughter. And once there was discussion of the wizard's power being allocated differently, she caught on pretty early in this crossroad that attached to her character. And, like, her character could use that as an opportunity to talk about her strife with her father. And it ended up forming a really cohesive character arc that would have been difficult to orchestrate as, like, a DM if I had been in charge and I was like, Shannon, you said in your backstory that you're the wizard's daughter. Well, now the wizard's doing this thing. You better stop him. Like, it would have felt really forced. But because none of us were in charge, it seemed to happen really organically.
Yeah, it was certainly interesting. It also played into, like, the wizard issue was he was afraid of his powers going out of control because he didn't even completely understand his tablet. But over the course of the game, he'd been using his powers more and more, just because it became clear that they were pretty useful in getting rid of the Romans, so he felt more confident. And that also came to a head here because he started using his power a lot more directly now that he was threatened, and he found an old, like, service drone that he could control like a golem, and he started having an escort Phylon around because one of the things that the Touchstones had always decided was that everyone hated Phylon, which is basically true. And so she needed the bodyguard.
Which was another interesting character moment because Novus had to, at one moment, actually decide that he was going to throw his sister under the bus in order to have his revolution so that his warped mind, their society, could improve.
The thing that actually made me laugh the hardest during this crossroads, and I don't know if it's the same thing as you, you're smiling really widely with Raven, so maybe it is, was that, like, gradually, first he had Janny D thrown in jail because she went with a bunch of citizens and they were writing rude things on the Wizard Tower, and he had them be kicked out with his golem. Then he came and he talked to the mayor, and he's like, "Mayor, you're going to throw her in jail, and she's not going to be able to drink anymore, and I'm going to have a long talk with her, straighten things out." But that only made things worse, and then Novus, with the guard, started to actually just openly preach, like, revolution, and once they came back with the stolen bits of wizard knowledge, wizard being my favorite adjective in all cases, to be clear, the wizard just wouldn't have it. He's like, "No, he also has to be thrown in jail." And the question was asked, and it seemed like, "Well, you can't throw the guard in jail. Who's going to be the guard then?" And I hadn't thought about that at the time. I had no idea. And so, out of the blue, I was like, "Well, obviously the Romans. They're going to be the new guard." And so that, even though we knew the Romans weren't quite as dangerous before, they had this weird thing where suddenly all these outsiders were pulled in to be the new guard for the town, and things were going out of control.
Yeah. Yeah, that was what I'm smiling about.
Okay, because it was not a thing that I thought of ahead of time, because it seemed like it fit so well, but it was spontaneous, I actually just burst out laughing at myself. I'm a huge nerd.
No, it really formed a more cohesive plot line than a lot of planned role-playing games I've been involved in, which is funny.
The way it ended was a big fiery climax at the top of the Wizard Tower. Janny climbed up. She overthrew me. She overthrew the power. She stole the tablet. And when someone overthrows you, you can either accept it with a yes, or you can accept it with a yes if. The if in this quiz was, yes, you can do it, if in the process you accidentally press a bunch of buttons on the tablet and things just start going crazy, which is what happened. So, like, the lights went off in large part of Mycopia, and she was kind of off her rocker at this point, and, like, pressing all the buttons because she was convinced that the magic would flow through her, and fire fell from the sky. And then with the wizard pushing her off the tower, and he died with the tablet going through his chest, and things settled abruptly. And as it happened, there are two systems that we haven't touched on yet, because they didn't come up for us a lot, and I think in a longer game, more game where people knew what they were doing ahead of time, more they would have come up. And those were crisis and time passes. And so the way it works is whenever you do a scene, you can choose to either have that scene count towards crossword being resolved, or you can have it count towards time passing or the crisis. And the respective character can help manipulate positive or negative for the crisis as well, but it didn't come up a lot for us. And it is kind of cool because when time passes is all filled out, what it means is that suddenly you jump years into the future of the kingdom, and, like, the same characters, presumably, unless they died. And I was actually considering if time had passed, I would have the wizard die and Phylon be the new wizard. She's going to call Phylon the voice, because wizard names. I think it's a really interesting way to see how things can shift in your society, and I don't know exactly how well it plays out, because by the time passes got completely filled in, we also filled in completely the crisis card. And when crisis happens, you have to deal with a big deal in the kingdom. And in the case, you discuss what you think the crisis is, and you discuss how it will be resolved, and you have to vote if you think the kingdom is going to be destroyed by this or not. And there was a good chance, in our case, the kingdom could have been. I was pretty up in the air on whether or not, and I decided not in the end. And that was a deciding vote, I think, because Shannon decided, "Oh, the kingdom's going down." And Raven decided we can probably salvage it.
Yeah, I mean, in some form, anyway.
Yeah. We decided that this would be the end of the game, regardless. So we then did just a little epilogue, where the wizard was already dead, but Phylon fled the country. She went to a different level. No one knows what happened to her. Shannon's character, sort of disgraced and crazy, went off and became a forest witch. She's living in the forest alone forever. And you want to talk about what happened to Novus?
Had we played longer, it was always kind of my intention that Novus would overthrow power and have a brief and ignoble rule So in his epilogue, I said that after the whole wizard-backed regime fell apart, because it was previously established that the mayor was kind of just the wizard's toady, Novus had enough popular support that he just became king, and he went through with all of his crazy schemes all at once, and like they closed all the borders, and because they closed all the borders, they ran out of all of the things that they were used to importing, and everything got really bad, so they just like overthrew him and killed him. And within, I don't know, I think I said 20 years, like everybody just remembered Novus as like that brief period that they had a really bad king.
King Novus, the bag of dicks.
Yeah, he was just the worst.
Yeah, so it felt like a natural end to all the characters.
Yeah.
We've been talking for a while now. I think we've discussed a lot. So yeah, let's go to final thoughts.
So I think that us playing Microscope first really colored my opinion of this game. I played Microscope, and as I mentioned in that episode, I've been playing role-playing games for a long time, and my interest has always kind of been the weirder ideas people have, and Microscope was still something that was just so different from anything else I'd ever seen, and it was such an elegant set of mechanics that coming into Kingdom, my expectations were unreasonably high, and I'm not sure I would have had positive initial opinions about the system, regardless of how good it was. However, now that's kind of settled. Kingdom is a game that looks and plays fairly similarly to Microscope, but is intrinsically different in some ways that make it really easy to, if you're playing it from the perspective of Microscope, feel like there are ways that it's worse than Microscope, but they're ultimately just ways that they're different. And just like Microscope, the most positive review I can ever give to a role-playing system is that I would be excited for an opportunity to play it again. And certainly, in our 3 hours of Kingdom, plus the hour talking about the setting, we had a more coherent plot line with more interesting established character arcs than I've had in some games of D&D that went on months of 7, 8, 12, 15 sessions, where it can be easy in other less focused systems to just kind of fall into a pattern where it's almost like episodic television, where each session you introduce some quirky NPCs and the characters do something interesting, and by the end of the session, nothing has really changed in such a way that someone who missed that session couldn't show back up the next session and resume playing without any catch-up, or maybe just like the brief previously on this show blurb that some television shows have. Like, so I think that Kingdom was really overall very good, and I'm left thinking that it would be a really interesting way to build a campaign setting for something else, where potentially you could start with a game of Microscope and build a timeline, and then play a series of maybe 3 or 4 games of Kingdom that were all set in the same period, and establish 3 or 4 really interesting, vibrant communities, and then move over, possibly with a different group of people, to playing a more conventional role-playing system, where these were just places and people that existed in the world. You could go and visit Mycopia and meet our characters or their descendants, and as a game master, you would have a really fully fleshed out perspective on these characters that had a more organic texture than when one person invents a setting whole cloth.
I also like this system a lot. It does beg comparison to Microscope because it's by the same guy. And where Microscope is very simple in a lot of good ways that are easy to pick up and easy to learn and easy to see in your head, I think Kingdom is a much, I've already said it's a much weirder system to me. I think the way it's set up takes a bit more to wrap your brain around. And like, I, even until the point where we started playing, I think, was not completely clear on how everything worked. It ended up going fine. We got a handle of it pretty well, and things zoomed off into the world of story, and that was great. I did like it a lot. I would happily play it again. The one thing I would note, though, is there's a lot of systems in the game that work a little differently if you're playing with more than 3 people. Because the way we did it is, again, there are 3 people playing, there's 3 possible roles, simple, done. If you play with more than three people, what you have is multiple people playing in same roles. And I don't know if that makes for a better game necessarily. I can't say for sure. It would certainly make for a more complicated game. And that could be good or bad, depending. But there's certainly points where, like, power could clash, or perspectives are predicting all kinds of stuff, or Touchstone means you have, like, a community divided. And I think that's something to keep in mind if you were to play it, listeners. I think it could be a lot of fun to try that at some point, but probably for your first game, and it does suggest in this PDF as well, I'd say start with three, and then maybe if you play again, move up and play with more people. And it was the case that we invited some other folks, and we might have ended up having a bigger game, but I don't think I would have wanted to do that, actually, as our first one, because it would have been a lot stranger. But yeah, talk to you next time.
Bye!
Bye!
Hey, thanks again for listening! Before we go, a few quick things. First, a shout-out to Gygax Magazine, who were kind enough to link our last episode, and suddenly loaded their Facebook page with unexpected torrent of likes. That was very exciting. Second, Kingdom, of course, can be found at Ben Robbins' site at lamemage.com/kingdom. Parallel Lives hardly recommends, and if you haven't tried Microscope yet either, it's really a lovely piece of work. Third, our music this episode was, again, Connection by Brian Boyd. And if you like the podcast, you can find show notes, pictures, and updates at parallelurl.com. If you want to have words with us, you can poke us at parallelpodcast@gmail.com or at parallelchat on Twitter. Or if you feel like you want to lend a hand, you can rate or review us on iTunes or Stitcher. Or even you can find at absoluteapocalypse.tumblr.com, and myself you can catch at wednesdayquestion.tumblr.com or at wednesdayquest on Twitter. I'd love to say hello.
The diamond level, despite not existing, had a coherent problem they were struggling with, which was that you couldn't eat diamonds.
Yeah, that is a big problem. No, that was your secret second piece of world building that you did during the game. That's a metagame there.